and welcome to today's Job Seeker Broadcast. Our topic is pursuing a dream job with no related experience. So if you've ever thought that you in your lifetime could aspire to a dream job, one that fit you like a hand to a glove, so that's not possible, you say. Well, today's broadcast may surprise you and hopefully challenge your thinking about your future. And to help me discuss this topic, I'm joined by a special guest, counselor George Dutch out of Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our 12 preferred counselors website, and you can see George's picture and bio. Just click preferred counselors on our toolbar. Hello there, George.
Hello again, John.
Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
George has been helping men and women advance in their careers since 1992. That makes him a seasoned veteran. His career transition company is entitled Job Joy. He hosts his own weekly radio show entitled Career Connection. George also does consulting for Fortune 500 companies, all levels of government agencies, nonprofits, ministry organizations, and small business firms. He has authored two publications, Job Joy and Job Boot Camp. Now, for the first 30 minutes of our show, George and I will talk about our topic, pursuing a dream job with no related experience, and then we'll take a short break and begin to answer job hunting questions which we receive for our broadcast. So, George, let's jump right in and talk about the thrill of getting hired in one's dream job. And just to kick this off, I want to maybe address why we pick this specifically and wordsmith the title. And it may surprise our listener that you and I and many others that are counselors and coaches in the field of career advancement are continually confronted with the fact that most people don't think that they could ever land that dream job. They have, in a sense, settled for B minus or B, maybe even B plus, because that A plus is just so elusive out there. And this show in specific is not only going to address the why we sell ourselves short, but also how to turn the boat around and get some wind in the sail, and then to just put the icing on the cake, you and I have selected some, some star examples of individuals who dared to dream and pulled it off. And you and I have some real zingers here to share, right, George?
Yes, we do. I'm looking forward to getting to those.
Yes. So as we just begin this discussion, George, why do you think people just don't pursue their dream job? It seems that most everyone would like to have an A-plus occupation and look forward to their work and just wait. They can't wait for Monday to roll around so they can get right on the job and show that they can do something significant. What's the hindrance here? What's the holdback?
Well, I think there's lots of factors involved, but many of them boil down to that word that you used at the top of the show, aspirations. A lot of people focus on their limitations rather than their opportunities. Before we started the show, I was listening to some beautiful piano music while I was waiting on the line, and I was thinking about how much time and energy people invest in learning how to play the piano. But people don't spend the same amount of time learning how to cultivate their dreams, how to translate or even discover and define what their highest aspirations are, what their deepest values are, and then learning how to translate that into work or into jobs. Because cultivating your dream job is just another skill. And like the piano, it can be learned, but it requires an investment of time and energy to do so.
Absolutely, yes. You know, As you and I have prepared for this, I've been attempting to come up with some everyday examples of what it is we're trying to say that we unconsciously do to limit ourselves. One illustration came to mind. I recall in high school, in a specific class, it was geography. And about maybe 2 weeks in, maybe 3 weeks into the class, the instructor called me aside and he said, John, I've been looking at your grades, and I'm really surprised that your grades are B. And he said, John, you're an A student. I don't understand why you allow these B's and C's. It was sort of a shock to me. He called me an A student, and I had never in my mind thought of myself as an A student. Well, I'll tell you what, I got an A in that class. And it was just that adjustment, I'm an A student. And you and I know that it doesn't take a lot of smarts in high school to pull a 4-point. All you have to do is complete all your assignments on time and listen to what the instructor wants, and they'll tell you what they want first day of class. That's it. And for most colleges, the same thing is true. It's that mindset. It's that attitude, and that transfers into everyday life, right?
I couldn't agree with you more, John. There are limitations, both external and internal. I'm not downplaying some of the external factors that can limit a person's opportunities, but I think the more profound ones, the ones that influence us more, we tend to be defined by our internal beliefs and attitudes and ideas about reality. Let me give you a simple example. A lot of people, when they think about job opportunities, they can think of 30 quite easily off the top of their head. And those are the ones that are clearly visible to us every day in society, like doctor, lawyer, teacher, truck driver, cab driver, postal delivery worker, professional athlete, and so on and so on. It's easy to come up with 30, but to come up with another 60, now people are really sweating. They have to really think, what is it that my cousin on the other side of the country does and that neighbor two doors down on the other side of the street? What's their job title? People are limited just by their knowledge of what exists in the job market. And as you have said many times on this show, there's 90,000 jobs operating in our economy, and there are probably several dozen that suit each person. Some of them would even be dream jobs. But because people are limited by that knowledge, they don't have any idea of what to pursue.
I recall, absolutely, yes. And I recall something that marked my own professional growth. In my early days, it would seem almost every day I would learn about 5 or 10 new occupations that I'd never heard of. And this one particular day, I was introduced to the salesperson that represented a very popular brand of men's garments. Let's say it would be something like Dockers or just a really popular line. And the reason this topic came up is that individual had been in that occupation. And so part of my learning curve is when I have a client who's in a new position I've never heard of, I spend a little time trying to find out about this. And so our conversation continued, and I said, well, how'd you get this job? Oh, my dad passed it on to me. And I said, oh. And he says, yeah, by the way, these jobs are so, so sought after that they're literally guarded and handed on from father to son. And all of a sudden, the light bulb went on in my mind. Aha, there are jobs out there that never show up on anybody's list. There are never vacancies posted because they are so sought after that they're filled before anyone ever finds out about them. And that realization began my quest. How can I help my clients find those positions which get filled before anyone finds out about them? And, George, you and I have talked about this, and even to the extent where our research has led us, 80% of jobs are filled before they ever get posted. And so what's an example of that? Well, a very clear example. If you aspire to be a lawyer and you go to law school, and if you're expecting to get hired by answering an ad after you graduate, then you're going to end up being an ambulance chaser, because the best jobs, the dream jobs, are filled through student internships. So it's during the summers, when the student is not going to class, that they go out and seek relationships with law offices and apply for internships, and these are paid positions, and that is how the good lawyers are recruited, and it's a standard, common known thing. Now, many, many, many companies and government agencies, you want to be a park ranger? Guess what? If you don't do an internship in your junior year of college, then you can forget being a park ranger. I mean, that's the inside track for that dream job. And I'll tell you what, I don't know anyone that at some point in their life, anyone that loves the outdoors, hasn't thought about being a park ranger. I mean, you talk about pinching yourself to wake up in the morning. Wow, I've got this cool job. And anyone that has it, everyone stands in line. How'd you get this job? How'd you get this job? That's how they get the job. So, George, can you maybe give us some thoughts on how does a person begin to dream to something that would be almost thought to be impossible? I don't have the experience. I don't have the background. I shouldn't even be. Come on, let's get real here. I got a mortgage to pay for. I got to take care of my family. We'll put that aside. Maybe some other life I'll get to it. So how does one even begin this process?
I think one begins by thinking about the kind of work that they enjoy doing, the kind of elements of work that they find consistently satisfying or particularly enjoyable, and to understand that there are many opportunities, almost an infinite number of opportunities, to use our talents and to apply them with our motivations to problems in the world. Because when you think about it, work is nothing more than activity organized around problems, challenges, issues, pressures that get in the way of corporate goals and objectives. And when we think about it in those terms, then we can understand why jobs are created. And we should also remember that we don't just have to settle for a job that already exists. There are new jobs being created all the time, and we have a lot of influence ourselves. We have some power in our own lives to create the kind of work or create the kind of job that suits us, not limited by what already exists out there. So if we open up our mind to the vast opportunities that exist by us taking some initiative and taking some responsibility for what we're good at, what we enjoy doing, and what we find consistently satisfying, we can start to break through that sort of fog that exists in our minds about the kind of work that's available. And we can start to get more specific in terms
George,
of where
this
to work.
George, this is great. Let's pick it up after the break.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan. Since the mid-70s, I've been counseling men and women who have hit a dead end in their career and feel like they don't have any possibility of finding a fulfilling job.
So you're saying that there is hope for some of us who are stressed out or don't like our work?
That's right, Evan. I think we're all aware that over 50% of employed adults state that they do not enjoy their work and that they would look for another career if they just knew how.
Well, I know you can't give us a silver bullet to know how to do it, but can you toss us some nuggets to ease the pain?
Certainly, Evan. What we have found in over 30 years and 30,000 adult clients is that a good job fit requires two important basic ingredients.
Okay, you have my attention. What are those two basics?
The two basics for a good job fit are, first, having a passion for what you do, something you really like, something which gives your life meaning and purpose.
Okay, I guess I figured that one out, but what is the second basic?
The second basic for a good job fit is something you are naturally good at doing, something that fits your wiring, something that brings out the best in you.
So you're saying that you must like the job and also be naturally good at doing it, right?
That's a starting point, Evan.
Okay. Well, we need to get back to our broadcast. We'll talk more about finding a job you can really be good at doing at our next break. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's pick up where we left off.
Well, here we are talking about pursuing a dream job with no related experience. And to help me deal with this enlightening topic, truly a joy, is George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada. George is the senior counselor and owner of his own agency, Job Joy. And George has earned the status of being one of our 12 preferred counselors out of over 600 that we have worked with and trained over the years. George is featured on our website, and you can see George's picture and bio. Just click on Preferred Counselor. So, George, just before the break, we were beginning to roll out a process to help our listener begin to believe, you know, I just might be able to dream and to achieve this ideal job. So the break just cut you off. Why don't you just back up about 10 seconds and finish your thought before the break?
Sure. When most people think about getting a job, they tend to focus on what kind of jobs are available, what exists out there now, where are the jobs, and they try to fit into that with a job title based on their education or based on something they think they can do. Coming up with a dream job option basically means answering the same questions, where and what. Where would you really like to work? What kind of a work setting could you see yourself working in a very satisfactory manner that meets your needs and your priorities and your preferences? And then what would you do there? What are the job titles that you can think of that best match up? And these job titles might be limited, as I said, by your existing knowledge, but understand that there's 90,000 job titles out there. So by acquiring the knowledge and skill necessary to develop a dream job campaign, you will slowly acquire or quickly acquire the knowledge and skills necessary to start specifying what that looks like, getting a picture in your mind of what you could see yourself doing every day, enjoying it, and where that would be. So coming up with where and what in specific terms is really what it comes down to.
Yeah, and I would say just to illustrate this, and I've heard this before, I have been a school teacher for 20 years. I am just totally burned out. What could a teacher do? And in that question, they've already defined their limitation. They have branded themselves as a teacher. I can only do teacher things. And I think what you and I are trying to communicate is you are a gifted person, and the skills that you have are not limited by the occupation or jobs of your past. You have innate DNA. You have genes in your system that empower you, and yet it's true, you may not have any experience, paid work experience, in opportunities where that hard wiring of yours can lead to, but if you believe that it can be accomplished, and that's what this broadcast is about, is to move the listener closer to the belief, then there's a very distinct possibility. And I just tossed out the example of maybe you didn't major in forestry or park service management, but you would just love to be a park ranger. And I've just explained how park rangers are hired. They're hired through summer internships. And there's that open door. There it is. Now, there are similar open doors to every single dream position. And I think at this point in our show would be a good time to introduce the kind of the mindset that we're talking about. And here's the example I'd like to give. Most everyone likes to buy where they save money. They buy something on sale, 20% off, 30% off, 50% off. So let's imagine that there's something that we need to buy that, let's say, costs more than $100. So if we can get it on sale, we're going to save, you know, even a 10% sale, we're going to save more than $10 and so on. We have two options on how to proceed on the sale. A, we can wait to receive an advertisement through the mail, through the newspaper. Maybe you're on a credit card list with a particular department store or store, and they're sending you their notices about things on sale, and you're waiting to hear about this item in terms of when it's on sale. That's the first option. And it's a very good possibility that you'll be waiting years and years and it will never be on sale. Or you can do your homework and find out where that item that you want, that specific brand of refrigerator, that specific automobile, that specific jacket is sold. You go to the store and you ask, I'm very interested in this particular product, this particular brand. Do these items ever go on sale? You're asking because you've done the research and you know that store. Now, the answer may surprise you as it did me when I did that. And I'm referring back now to some instruction that I gained from the internationally renowned financial debt counselor, David Ramsey, who's got his own syndicated radio program, and he advocates, all you have to do is ask. As a matter of fact, he advocates living by never spending full retail price. And he has a whole list of things you can do so that you never pay full price again. So that's like increasing your annual income by 20% because you're always buying something on sale. Well, by asking. Now, here's what I did that blew me out of the water. There's a favorite store I go to with building materials. I'm always doing some project around the house, and I had a big project that I was doing, and I had selected over several hundred dollars worth of building materials, 2x4s and all nails and self-drilling screws and on and on and on. And as I approached the cashier, a thought popped into my head, and I said, do you ever offer discount for military? And much to my surprise, I got 10% discount right on the spot. All I had to do was show my veterans card. And from that day forward, I've been buying a 10% discount. Now, is that something?
Yes.
And you had to ask. Now, there are sophisticated things that a person can learn. And, George, matter of fact, you and I have done broadcasts on where to find the hidden jobs. The hidden jobs are these items that are on sale, but they're not advertised. This particular building material store will not advertise that they give a 10% discount. Their competitor, I went to their competitor. These are large national stores. I went to the competitor, and I said, you offer a discount for military. Oh, yes, we do. I get 10% there, too. I have saved hundreds and hundreds of dollars in the last 2 years by buying with my military card. So there is that issue of to do the research and to ask, and you will find these hidden opportunities and your your job is there. Now, we've covered the issue of where the jobs are. What we haven't covered is the issue of getting hired with no related experience. Now, here's the next illustration. Your parents are good friends with the president of XYZ company. You want to work for that company, and you want a specific job in that company. You go to your parents and say, our family friend is president of this company, and I would like a job, this specific job in that company. Can we start a conversation? Well, the family relationship is established. That president knows you because he's a very good friend of your parents. And we're not stretching believability to say that if you had a conversation with the president and tell the president what you wanted to do and why, that the president would say, well, let me tell you, I'm very interested. I think we can put something together and get you there. And there is your dream job. Now, your family isn't going to be friends with every president of every company. There is a way that you can develop a relationship with the department head, general manager, executive of the company. There is a way you can do that so that you can have that kind of conversation, as long as the company, and here's the caveat, the company has to be growing or changing. If a company is bailing out or they're losing market share, this isn't going to work. But if the company is growing or changing and you are very clear about what it is you want to do, then that door is wide open because they're hiring. Matter of fact, they're hiring faster than they can advertise for positions. George, I've spoken so long, I've kind of worn out my vocal cords here. Fill in what I haven't, or clean up something that I haven't said or that I've said that needs some tweaking here.
Well, I think they're great concepts and principles, and maybe we could apply them to a question that's come in. Because it's very much in this vein. It's from Jared in Nashville, Tennessee. He says, I'm self-employed as a production events coordinator. I make a reasonable income. However, my job requires too much travel. How do I find something that allows me to be home most every night? And I think before we go to the break, I just want to say to Jared, and we'll come back and pick up his story after the break, but when we go looking for something, we tend to focus on our needs and priorities, not realizing that the most important person in the hiring process is the one that you just described, the president of that company, the person that has the power to make the hiring decision. We need to focus more on their needs and priorities. Find out what's what they need, because that's what's going to drive a hiring decision. So, again, it comes down to research. It comes down to asking. It comes down to talking to people and questioning them about what their needs and priorities are. What are their corporate goals and objectives? What kind of problems and challenges and issues and pressures are they facing in their sector and in their company? And then you start to cultivate a job opportunity, as opposed to a job vacancy. And we can
discuss
that difference when we come back.
And we're going to pick this up after the break, George. Thank you.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some more questions about moving ahead when you're stuck in a lousy job going nowhere. John, in our last break, you gave us two basics which any fulfilling job must have.
That's right, Evan. Every fulfilling job must be something you like. Something which gives you meaning and purpose. A second basic is having job duties which bring out the best in your natural strengths.
Okay, John, I've been thinking about that natural strengths part. What is the difference between a skill a person has learned from previous work experience and a natural strength or talent?
Well, Evan, each of us has a set of innate strengths which are part of our DNA. When we do career aptitude testing, we look for those and then match them to the things a person likes to do.
So what are some examples of these natural strengths?
Well, we have researched this extensively and have a database of over 90,000 career matches. In that range of careers, we find 54 distinct natural talents, which represent all of those 90,000 options. 90,000 career matches. Is that a big or small number? I was thinking of something like a million or so.
Well, actually, Evan, 90,000 is a very big number. Most all career tests commonly used by colleges only have 2,000 to 3,000 career options in the database. So 90,000 is huge in comparison. I think you were probably recalling employment statistics regarding millions of jobs rather than career options.
Okay, I see. So how does a person plow their way through 90,000 career options to find a fit? Maybe we can take up your answer at the next break.
Yes, sure.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our show.
We're back to our broadcast talking about pursuing a dream job with no related experience. And joining me in this truly enjoyable discussion is George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada. And George is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And George's picture and biographical information is found. Just click on Search for Counselor George. We jumped right into a job seeker question that we've received, and that was Jared in Nashville. And I think we just barely were able to read the question before the break. You were just getting ready to give the punchline to what you thought Jared should do to change careers, because he seems to be sort of in a mud puddle at this point. Now, why don't you finish your thought, and I have a couple thoughts myself.
Sure, and maybe you could illustrate some of the concepts we've been talking about by talking or telling us a story about a client that you've had that made a transition or found a dream job. But I'll just remind listeners that Jared said he's self-employed as a production events coordinator, but his job requires too much travel, so he wants a job where it would allow him to be home most of the night with his family. And what I said was that when we look for a job, we tend to focus on the problem. His problem is, I'm traveling too much. It's hurting my family life. I need to fix this problem. Rather than thinking about his dream job or his highest aspirations, or he's talking about his values here, which is good. He wants to be home with his family. But you need to make a switch in your mind. You need to make a shift from focusing on your own needs and priorities, and Jared is very clear about what his are. And you need to think about the needs and priorities of the most important person in the hiring process, which is that person that has the power to hire you. So Jared needs to think about what kinds of organizations or work settings he'd like to work in where he lives in Nashville. And then he can start to think about what kinds of corporate goals and objectives those organizations have, what kinds of problems and challenges and pressures they're facing in their sector. And then he wants to start connecting with people. Like you said, he wants to start asking his friends and family if they know anybody in these particular companies, if they could hook him up so that he could talk to these people. And he wants to ask them questions about their corporate goals and priorities and what kinds of challenges they're facing. Because as I mentioned earlier, work is nothing more than activity organized around those challenges and problems that get in the way of corporate goals. So by getting that discussion going with somebody who works in a company that he'd like to be a part of, he can start to cultivate job opportunities. So let me stop there and hand it over to you.
Yes, I think you and I are definitely on the same page. And the key here, first of all, is the person has to take the first step to believe that there is a dream job out there. Almost, hidden in Jared's statement was, I just need some job that lets me be at home. Well, you know, how many months or years in that job before it becomes old and stale and somewhat repetitive and so on? Why not dream to the dream job? that could be local. And I think you stated it very well. The person has to identify what the dream job is and then where locally that dream job exists. And then the next step is we need to start a relationship with those managers and executives of those companies and nonprofits and organizations where the job exists, and this thing's going to happen. Now, to illustrate all of this, you had mentioned, let's give an example. And one of my favorite examples just hits the nail on the head. A client of ours was seeking to break out of his ho-hum job, and he had just finished his adult continuing education degree to get his bachelor's at the age of 45, and now life is going to start. And so we were looking through some of the job future career aspiration possibilities from his testing results, and lo and behold, there was a medical surgeon. And he looked at that and laughed and said, yes, I always wanted to be a surgeon. And the problem is I don't want to go to medical school. Well, there it was right there. There was the credibility. I have no experience, but I really, really would dream for that job. And so I said, well, I'll tell you what, if you're willing, I will put my 30 years of experience behind this. Let's see how close we can get. And he kind of did a double take. You got to be kidding. I said, no, I'm not kidding. So off he went. And where he began doing his research was with companies that supply the artificial body parts when hospitals do the surgery for knee and joint replacement and the artificial bone inserts, because these body parts have degenerated. And so he found a company that supplied these bone implants and ended up talking to a sales representative in the company. And what he learned was the sales representative is in the operating room showing the surgeon how to insert that bone replacement. And he said, that's it. I am now a surgeon. That is good enough. That is doable for me. And there it was. If he had never even been willing to do the research, this thing would have never happened for him. And that story is so good because it sounds so impossible. Now, you and I have other stories. And why don't you do one up on that one, George, because I know you have lots of other possibilities. Why don't you give us one of your examples?
Sure. I'm thinking of a client. Her name is Valerie, and when she first came to see me, she was a law office clerk, and she was bored to tears with the subject matter. She really had no natural inclination or interest in law as a subject matter. She had gone on to that career, like so many people, because there were lots of lawyers in the city where she lived, and so she knew she could get a job as a law office clerk. But she was the kind of person that spent all her spare time telling her friends and family about books she had read, movies she had seen, restaurants she'd gone to, clothes that she was really crazy about. She was a natural promoter. She loved to tell people about things that she found interesting or worthwhile, and she could convince them to try things, try new things. She just had this natural promoting talent. So it was pretty clear that kind of matched up with some marketing-related positions, but she had no training in marketing. She had no credentials in marketing. But I encouraged her to continue to nurture that talent by telling people those things, and that we would look for opportunities for marketing that didn't require lots of credentials or education. Well, at about that time, social media was taking off, and companies were moving away from traditional advertising vehicles like newspapers and moving their advertising budgets more online. And this was new territory. It was very hard to get a degree in internet marketing officer. So I encouraged her to investigate opportunities with companies that were doing something online that really interested her. And within 4 months, she got a position as an affiliate manager, which is a position that didn't exist 5 years ago, but as part of the new e-commerce industries, put it up all over the place. She got a job because she was a natural relationship builder with people. She liked to promote. She had some creative talents in terms of being able to draw out ideas about ads and things like that. She had a knack for working with numbers and forecasting, working with spreadsheets, which is a practical skill she picked up as a law clerk. And wouldn't you know it that she just excelled as an internet marketing officer, which in that company was called an affiliate manager.
Wow.
She focuses on generating internet traffic to the website of the company. She has accounts that she manages. She's troubleshooting and problem-solving marketing issues on the website and on their online campaigns. She just has a very stimulating job with an organization. This is their website as a lucrative platform. And
wow.
There's lots of positions like this when people go looking.
And I think the key that you and I have finally burrowed down to, you know, what is the root here that determines whether somebody is going to pursue their dream job or not is they have to believe. And she had to believe that all this information about her was true enough to begin the research, and the research then affirmed the belief, and it kept going to the point where she was able to talk herself through a job interview and get hired. Wow. That's awesome.
That's right.
Yeah.
What I did I asked her to keep a scorecard. I said to her, every time you tell somebody to try something new or go to a movie or try a restaurant, mark it down on a card and then call them in a week or two and see if they followed up on your suggestion, if they listened to your advice or your suggestion. And as she pulled out those cards, after 2 months, she was astounded at how many people had followed her advice. And that was the turning point for her. When she realized that she had persuasive talents as a promoter, that's what convinced her that there might be a future in marketing for her without further education or credentials.
Yeah, there we go. Beautiful. Well, if you got some more job seeker questions for us as we're winding down to the last quarter of our show.
Yes, let's move to another question. Here's one from Michelle in Tigard, in Oregon, your part of the country. She says, I've been a homemaker full-time for the last 10 years with over 15 years of prior sales experience. My son is off to college. I would like to find something in the nonprofit field that is not entry-level. How do I get started? So she's defined a bit of a dream job working in the nonprofit field, not entry-level. She's got sales experience. What would be your advice to her, John?
Well, one of the things that I like to do in situations like this, we'll pick this up after the break.
Hello, this is Evan Newman, back for a final 2-minute broadcast break. John, in our previous break, you were talking about a database in your career match system of 90,000 career options. I ask, how does a person discover their best career or two from 90,000 possibilities?
Well, Evan, let's begin our advice by playing to our natural strengths, our hardwiring.
Well, what is so important about your emphasis on the hardwired part? Are there soft-wired traits?
Yes, we have both hard and soft-wired traits. We have those innate traits which make us who we are. These are our hardwired traits. We also have skills we have learned on the job or in a college degree program. These are the softwired traits. When you choose a career, you want to put your innate traits in first place.
Okay, so start with the hardwired traits. But you mentioned degree programs. I'm thinking of engineering, teaching, nursing, dental hygienist. Are those examples of learning soft-wired traits?
Yes, Evan. Each of those occupations represent advanced academic training, which prepares a person with skills to use on the job.
So what is the problem? Why are you separating these classroom skills from one's innate skills and choosing one's ideal career? Are you saying that a person cannot learn innate skills in the classroom?
Exactly, Evan. By definition, our hard wiring is part of our genetic code. On the other hand, a person can learn precision detail dental skills or problem-solving engineering skills or even classroom teaching skills. But every high school student will tell you there are some good teachers and there are some okay teachers and, well, there are some who should look to do something else.
So you mean to say that there are some naturally gifted teachers, dentists, engineers, nurses, and so on?
That's right.
Well, wait a minute. Why would someone choose a career and then pursue a degree to do something which he or she was not hardwired gifted to do? It doesn't make sense.
Well, sadly, it happens every fall term when campuses start up. Schools do not test for innate talent. That is the hardwiring. They test for academic ability to learn a subject matter.
Wow, that seems like a lot of money spent and a lot of debt for the wrong profession.
Well, that's one way to look at it, Evan. We find that the average person under 30 years of age has enough reserve energy to make do if they lack the innate hardwired skills needed for a job. So as long as a person is 30 or younger and has a lot of self-discipline, they can do reasonably well in most any profession where they have received academic training.
Okay, what's the rub?
Well, the rub is that when the person is on the job, they are not able to move beyond the classroom skills they have learned unless they return to the classroom. They don't intuitively, in their core, understand what they're doing.
Wow.
Yep. They are limited in their ability to adapt and grow beyond the classroom instruction given.
You mean that a person who is not wired for the job is like a computer program which cannot intuitively grow beyond the original designs?
Yes. Not to intuitively grow on the job causes internal stress and certainly does not lead to fulfillment.
Well, John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference Preferred Counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of our show. Let's return.
You bet. Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley, who has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to our show.
We're back to our broadcast. We've been talking about pursuing a dream job with no related experience, and we're trying to illustrate that by answering job seeker questions that we have received. And I'm joined to answer these questions by career advancement expert George Dutch from Ottawa, Canada. George is one of our 12 preferred counselors that we've selected from all of those that we work with, and he's featured on our website. And if you just tuned in, you can see George's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on the top of our toolbar. George, we were just getting into responding to a question about finding a job after being a homemaker for 10 years with, 15 years of experience. Was that it?
Michelle in Tigard. Yeah, 15 yeah. years of prior sales experience, and now she'd like to find something in the nonprofit field. So what a wonderful come up with your dream job, Michelle.
Yeah, yeah, and in this kind of a situation, Michelle has not said anything about I need the money. So, and we might infer that having been a homemaker for 10 years, money was not a problem. There's other income in the family, perhaps. I like to coin and use this coin phrase, buy yourself a job. So this is a perfect opportunity for Michelle to dream and consider, what might I do for the next 15, 20 years, and approach the employer and make the employer an offer that is so good that they they can't turn me down. And why that is so pertinent is, during times of economic stress, there are organizations that cannot afford to hire ahead of the income that that new position would bring. So they're behind the eight ball. They really need someone, but they can't afford it because the receipts on sales made is not substantial enough to warrant paying for that position. So Michelle comes along. She's done her research. She knows this company is right on the edge of a major boom, and she presents a proposal that it knocks the employer out of their chair. You got to be kidding. And therefore literally negotiates her way into a position. Now, I'm not talking blue sky here. This is something that a client of ours actually did to land his dream job. And what he did was, he found a company. He wanted a job. He was an accountant for a large city, central admin office, and he wanted to work with a cutting-edge startup company that had a science base. He just had this allure of science. He found this company that was 4 years old. They had not yet earned enough money to even pay the salaries of the principals. They just had enough to pay the clerical and administrative staff. And but what he discovered in his research was that they had gained the advantage of being on the front cover of Popular Science magazine 6 months. I think it was to come out in January. And this was a already secured situation. And so he approached them from the standpoint of anticipated future revenue and negotiated a position to assist them in their admin part of the business, which was not, that part was not being handled well because they couldn't afford to hire a professional to do it. In 1 year, he was vice president of finance in that company, and everything that he had predicted did happen. The Popular Science magazine happened. They were on the front cover, and it just blew the doors wide open, and they all had their act together. And how he bought himself a job was, he negotiated to work for them at minimum wage, and he would renew that every 3 months based upon his productivity. And at the end of every 3 months, they both could part company or they could renew and stay. And should the revenues start coming in as they all hoped, the company would back pay him what they had agreed to was a reasonable salary for the position. But if he left the company, then they would owe him nothing. And that was his offer. He basically bought himself a job that didn't exist, and was willing to take that risk. And in 1 year, he was vice president. I mean, that is an incredible story. It serves as an encouragement to Michelle that she is in that place where she can choose what she wants to do for the company or nonprofit, that especially nonprofit, and then negotiate it. And there we are. How about another job seeker question, George?
Okay. Here's one from Gary in Idaho. He says, in a few months, I will be offered a job transfer that I don't want to take. I'm too young to retire, but too old to start a new career. So if Gary wants to stay put in Idaho, I think this is a great opportunity for him to dream big and think about the kind of work that he'd love to do.
Absolutely, yes. And, you know, the thing that's limiting Gary right now, where he says, I'm too old to start a new career, says who? you know, it's not that he has to retool himself. He needs to pay attention to his hardwired innate talents that he has been using all along, most likely. And it doesn't sound like he's complaining about the job he has now. It's just he's complaining about the transfer.
Correct.
So there seems to be some positive momentum going here where Gary needs to get really busy about a position similar to his current position, and he needs to do the hidden job search to find that position. It's no different than what we talked about at the top of the hour, and that is you need to go to the store and ask, is this ever on sale? He needs to go and inquire, is your company growing or changing? Because if they are, there will be an opportunity there. Any other comments on that, Gary in Idaho, question?
Well, if he's too young to retire, but too old to start a new career, I think the option that you described for Michelle is also very valid for him. He could target specific organizations that he'd like to work with in his part of Idaho and approach them with a proposal. I'm assuming that he's a person of some senior experience and that he knows how to make business proposals. And again, like Michelle, he could create his own job, or what you said, buy his own job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's offered this transfer. It's reasonable to assume that there's some time here. You know, we don't know. Is it 3 months, 6 months, where he can deliberate and think it through and so on. So in the meantime, he ought to be, he needs to hit the floor running in terms of looking for something else locally. If he chooses not to take the job transfer, he still would have that time to do the search. George, thank you. We're at the end of the show in an absolute great show.
Up our job seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert, John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group. He has been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. John has authored 4 career advancement books. He led the development team for the premier IDAC Career Match instrument, which has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. John has personally trained over 600 counselors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. He personally selected 12 of these 600 whom he highlights on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They're not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group. They have not paid any fee to be featured. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I invite you to join us next week at the same time for our next live broadcast. Do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. These questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening. Best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.